Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bring you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I got my performance-enhancing drugs over here. I'm hurt, man. I'm hurt. This is my Yeah, I'm breaking
down.
You're
hurting me with this.
I'm breaking down.
This lounge singer look.
You don't like
that
this?
You got going on. Are you gonna do some karaoke?
I shouldn't have done that. Oh,
cover
man.
Tunes.
Is it bad that this ibuprofen expired in 2019?
Yes.
It's okay,
yes.
Right? I'm good.
I mean, you could give it a shot. I don't know if the effectiveness, but
it just won't work as well.
200 milligrams. How many should it take?
I'd say double up the normal dose because it's.
200 milligrams, and it would expire 3 years ago. How many should I take?
1,000.
I got the BioFreeze. Somebody suggested the BioFreeze yesterday. I got the BioFreeze.
Okay. You really do have a mini pharmacy on the table.
My you wife, want the Theragun? I'll bring it in for you.
I'm not sure I'm ready for that. I'm not sure I'm ready to
activate
they work. It.
They,
I'm not,
do they do work.
Will you do it for me? Will you gun me down tomorrow?
Oh, I'd before the show? All means, can I go to the high speed?
The way that you're laughing and like enjoying this, I don't know yeah. if I really want to do
There's
this.
There's certain attachments that I would gladly help you with that because, oh, you would be feeling
I
it.
I don't know if I want to do that. My wife, she bought me some Solenpass. Do you know what that is? I've never
heard
of this.
It. Yes.
Today.
It's I like saw this, the commercial for
it's
it.
It's this little patch that you put on your back. I might have to do that for the second half of the show. The Astros played baseball yesterday. They wanted baseball yesterday. I don't know if that was the lead story, though. In fact, I can tell you that it's not. Every single day we see the Houston Astros lineup, everybody has some takes. Everybody has some thoughts about the Houston Astro lineup. You've been on the campaign, hashtag play the man instead mm-hmm. of pay the man, which is a great slogan.
Thank you.
For Trey Mancini. It's very, very well done. When you saw that lineup, which, by the way, Joe Espada making it very clear, even though Dusty Baker's not with the team, get well soon, Pawpaw. Also, the Astros general manager, James Click, when he was on with the cardiac arrest earlier today, also said that he's not, that Dusty's making the lineup card, even though he's away. So it's very clear that this is a Dusty lineup. What were your thoughts when you saw the hometown nine yesterday?
This simple baseball logic is not going to play in. It's just... It's deeply annoying to me, but it's something that with every passing day and every game that it doesn't go the way I believe it's supposed to go, that I think baseball purists think it should go, it just lets me believe I can't waste any more energy on this because it's not going to change. Whether he is COVID-bound in a room secluded, he's still texting the lineup into Joe Espada, and he's still Dusty's going to Dusty. And so no matter how much it drives me nuts, there's just nothing you could do about it because – as good as Mancini's been since you brought him here, with the fact that we kept saying it was all about the V word, his versatility, and the fact that with that big V means he should get some left field too, but there, with the way he's been playing too, you got to find a spot for him somewhere. And the fact that he's not in the lineup, it's just mind-boggling, but you just go, yep, it's just, we know that Dusty's going to Dusty, and that's just the way it ends.
He was taking fly balls in the outfield yesterday. He
well,
was getting
good.
Adjusted to the Crawford boxes in left field. Although, I'd be surprised if he's on the mound today. It's a Verlander day, right? Justin Verlander is a fly ball pitcher.
Yeah.
I don't think that Trey Mancini's first game in left field is going to be behind Justin Verlander, a fly ball pitcher. But Dusty's going to Dusty, so who really knows? Now,
exactly the reason why he shouldn't be out there is the reason why he'll probably be front and center in left field.
The times that, like, the Mancini thing I wasn't too upset about yesterday, Trey Mancini's actually a reverse splits guy. I don't want to go too far in the weeds, but he actually hits righties better than lefties. So it's like, okay, you're probably not going to play him over Yuli. Yuli's better against lefties than Mancini is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're playing Mancini in the outfield, he's probably starting ahead of Diaz. Diaz is another reverse split guy, too, by the way. My biggest complaint about the Dusty lineup when I saw it yesterday is that you have Chaz McCormick, who's actually elite against left-hand pitching.
Yes.
His OPS is in the thousands. Like, he is elite against lefties, and the dude can't scratch the lineup. And look, I know it worked out yesterday. Ledmus Diaz hit the grand slam. I had some good old-fashioned Branham foot and mouth on Twitter saying that Chaz should have started ahead of Diaz, and then Diaz, of course, hits the grand slam. But it's fascinating to me that Chaz, who I guess Dusty just doesn't like, can just knock the cover off the baseball against lefties, can be elite offensively against lefties.
He
can't crack the lineup.
And again, it doesn't make sense because if you say the numbers show that for reasons known to them and not us in terms of analytics, and maybe known to us too. But that's why Mancini's not in the lineup, as opposed to in this case Diaz. Well, then the numbers should also show you that's Chaz the same way. The numbers show should be in the lineup as well, and then he's not. And you're going, okay. The thing that I'm sure of is whatever doesn't make sense to Dusty. I throw my hands in the air and go, okay, well, they're not going to change, so we just got to deal with it.
What's that old saying that whatever can go wrong will go wrong?
Yeah.
It's kind of the Dusty lineup. Whatever can go in the lineup will go in the lineup.
Or whatever I can do to screw with you mentally, I will do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think sometimes he might almost do things to spite because he knows he's going to get reaction.
I think he's doing things to spite Chaz McCormick. I'm not even joking about that.
No, I think James Click, too.
Let's remember last year at the trade deadline, James Click traded Miles Straw. Everybody thought it was for, you know, one, it was to get Jake Myers more at-bats, get him to the big leagues, make him kind of your primary center fielder. But he also wanted to see Chaz more than Miles Straw in center field, and Dusty refused to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Dusty would go on the record a lot this year talking about Jose Siri's outfield versatility, whereas Chaz McCormick, he wouldn't talk about that. Jake Myers, look, I think that he's being given a long runway to try to figure things out. But the fact that Mauricio Dubon has started more games in center field since Jake Myers has returned than Chaz McCormick has, I think that that is a message. I think that that is out of spite a little bit, and I just don't understand it. Like, I understand the logic of, okay, Jake Myers, you go play 5 out of every 7 games. We're trying to get you right. You got our most potential in center field. We love your defense. We're trying to get you right. Like, I understand that logic. The logic I don't understand is why in the world would Mauricio Dubon have more center field starts since Jake Myers came back over Chaz McCormick? That, to me, makes zero sense to me.
In Dusty's mind, how it makes sense is this guy's played center field way too much to not be in center field, no matter how much he can't hit. It's all about the fact that if your resume says you've played there and played there somewhat consistently or more consistently than the other guy, then that's the guy I got to go with. And in a lot of ways, I think that in terms of spite with James Click, Dusty is saying, your analytics can kiss my ass. I'm an old school baseball guy. I forgot more baseball than you'll ever know, no matter what the numbers say, and I'm doing it my way.
Yeah. It's been refreshing to me. Look, I don't think Espada is making a whole lot of the decisions here. Like Joe Espada said yesterday pregame that it's still Dusty's lineup. Click also confirming it is Dusty's lineup, even though that he's away. It's nice listening to Espada talk, whether it's pregame or postgame. Like, he actually sounds like a manager. He actually knows who the opposition is. He actually knows what Jose Urquidy's doing in the third inning.
He also gave you a little bit more clarity in terms of how it works. Pregame and leading up to first pitch, it's still all Dusty. But what he said to the AT&T sports people is, I'm really enjoying the in-game decisions I get to make. That was almost verbatim his quote. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, it's been fun for me to be able to make the decisions that I'm able to make in-game. That tells you a lot about the fact that I'm sure there are plenty of times that he's shaking his head internally going,
Oh, no.
But Dusty's going to Dusty, and he's got to accept it, or he's not going to be Dusty's guy.
Chandler Rome asked Espada yesterday, and this is what led to Espada saying it's still Dusty's lineup. He said, Chaz McCormick is very good against lefties. Why is he not in the lineup? And I think there's actually 3 ways to get either Trey Mancini or Chaz McCormick into the lineup. One of them involves benching Yuli Gurriel, which is something people don't want to do because they're loyal to Yuli Gurriel. He's been hitting better, although he hadn't been hitting so great in the last 7 days.
Lately, that 2-hole is wearing off, too.
Yeah, it's starting to wear off a little bit. So, like, that's one avenue. I know Diaz hit the home run yesterday, but Diaz isn't as good against lefties as Chaz McCormick is. And then, of course, there is the center field option as well. So it is fascinating, day in, day out, to see what Dusty Baker's going to throw out. Like, the center field thing I can live with a little bit more. Because I do feel like they're trying to get Jake Myers right. Like, we're going to give Jeremy Pena the runway to figure it out offensively, to try to figure out his struggles, because Jeremy Pena is the best shortstop on this team, potential-wise, and he's so good defensively. Jake Myers is really good defensively, too. He's the best defensive center fielder that you have. He showed last year that he could be a pretty good hitter as well, better hitter than Chaz, better hitter than Mauricio Dubon, certainly. Not a better hitter than Kyle Tucker, like, if you have the, you know, I guess, fantasy of Kyle Tucker playing center field. So, like, I'm good with that. I'm good giving Jake Myers until September to try to figure things out. I'm not okay with Chaz McCormick sitting behind, really, Aledmys Diaz, even though he hit the grand slam yesterday, against lefties. And I'm not fine with Chaz McCormick not getting starts in center field ahead of Mauricio Dubon. It's malpractice. It's malpractice not having Chaz McCormick in lineups against left-handed pitching.
No, I totally agree with you. And that's why I said, at a certain point, you just got to shake your head and just accept the unacceptable because it's not going to change. They're not going to change their way of thinking and their way of doing things, no matter how much we know and say, and baseball purists and baseball experts and baseball analysts are all going to tell you the same thing. It's just one of those things that Dusty's done his whole career, and at this point in time, he's never going to change, so you just roll with it. But it is frustrating, and when you look at it, I mean, let's also address that right away. The people that kind of push back on both you and I when we say Peña is an above-average defensive shortstop, look, right away in the first inning last night, everybody wants to jump. Look, this is why, and I forget the last time we were on Twitter, and a couple people on Twitter started coming at us, and then all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute. If you want to call out every time there's a play that you say, oh, he might have bobbled that, or oh, that was on him, because that last night was not on him.
You talking about the feed from Altuve?
The feed in the first inning. But the last time this happened, Peña made three outstanding plays within about a four-inning span, and I retweeted all of those and tagged the people and said, is this what you're talking about? And they were like, well, I mean, progress is being made. I'll wait to pass my final judgment. Look, with the amount of baseballs hit to a shortstop, no matter where you are in the major leagues, on a nightly basis, with the amount of opportunities you have to succeed and fail, there are going to be times that you don't field the ball 100% cleanly and make the best throw and do those things. But the numbers don't lie when you look at how good he's been defensively. I understand it. If you want to talk about the offensive side of it, we can talk about it for a long time because Diaz has been a stud over the last 90 days, 60 to 90 days, whereas Peña, we know, is hitting less than 200. So we can talk about that, and I'm open to that discussion. But let's just pause all the noise on Peña not being a good defensive shortstop.
People point to the fielding percentage, which is an antiquated number. I mean, he's getting to more balls than other shortstops are. The computers love Jeremy Peña defensively. 713-780-ESPN. These Dusty Baker lineups, do you have a problem with them? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Andrew Brandt, your guy, former Packer general manager, front office guy, will be joining us at 12:30. Also, big one at 1:30. Roy Oswalt, one of the greatest Houston Astro pitchers of all time, will be joining us at 1:30. Do you have a problem with Dusty's lineup? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That ball drilled deep left center field. That's a slam! Alexis Diaz hits a grand slam to tie it up. That's the big one.
It was a grand dong by Aledmys Diaz yesterday. Astros needed it, too. It tied the game.
I'm heading to Taco Bell. I'll be right back.
I thought it was very encouraging to see that the Astros down four runs, you know, able to mount a big inning and come back, score seven runs, and to do it in a day that Yordan was 0 for 4 in the game. That was encouraging to see from a Houston Astro. A good pitcher.
Yeah, no, really good pitcher that had been pitching phenomenally well. And a tough lefty. And when you think about it, the Astros are great front runners. And we've seen the stats throughout the year where if they score first and if they get a four spot on the board or more, that they are tough to beat. On the flip side, when they don't score first, they've had a really tough time pulling out games. But then to keep digging the hole deeper and look for, you know, all of the Cy Urquidy talk.
Yeah, I need to stop doing that.
He was not exactly Cy worthy last night with three bombs given up. And I kept thinking, well, if it's a one-run or two-run game, they got a shot. And then it got to four, and I thought, oh, man, this thing's going to get out of reach, and I'm going to end up, you know, really disengaging in this game. And I was looking forward to watching them after a game off. But then they got smart. They just started taking pitches, you know. The first two innings, he threw less than 10 pitches in both innings. You're like, well, you're doing him an extra solid favor on top of him having good stuff. But then they started taking pitches, and they started working at bats, and Yordan knew he wasn't going to see anything really good to hit. And the fact that Tucker looked like a totally different player, and he looked like he was on top of his game in the box as well, and it set the table for arguably the hottest hitter on the team right now, And he stayed hot, and he did what he was supposed to do.
And it gets us back to our question. Do you have a problem with Dusty's lineup? Our HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 4481, who I think is Dusty Baker Jr. It's funny how often sports journalists and fans alike second-guessed and questioned decisions of Dusty Baker, who's been in Major League Baseball for 54 years, longer than any of you have been alive. I think the Texans should hire Vince Lombardi. Let's see what Frank Sham's up to.
You need to hire
people to be your head coach that have been around baseball, football, basketball for decades. Five decades at least. I need that from my head coach.
Whoever that was and wherever it came from, that lends itself beautifully to what we've been talking about the entire time. Dusty believes that being in baseball as long as he has, that his old school mentality is going to supersede anything that any analytical person or smart modern-day baseball guy brings to the table. Mm-hmm. So that's why Dusty's going to Dusty. And it doesn't equate the way that person thinks it does when you start talking about analytics, but you start talking about win probabilities and you start talking about success rates with lineups. It doesn't equate.
I have a problem with that, too. Kind of like we were talking about Pena yesterday and the problem that I have using the rookie excuse. Okay, yeah, he's a rookie. I acknowledge that. But you have to do what is best for the 2022 team. Same, like if the one excuse you have for Dusty Baker is that he's old and he's been doing it for a long time, it doesn't make you right. You could be at whatever age. What is right is right. What is wrong is wrong. So just because you're old and you have 54 years in baseball, it doesn't make it the right decision.
If La Russa believed that his batter was supposed to bunt right there, but he let him get a couple of pitches in because they missed the sign or whatever, but then with a favorable count, he still makes them bunt. But that doesn't make it right.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Mr. Brostash on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. If you aren't going to play a guy like Mancini every day, then why even go after him? Mancini's got to be in your everyday lineup, and that goes to your adage, your hashtag, play the man.
Play the man. Play the man. Play the man. Trade day should be every day. Trade day should be every day, and it should be play the man. And that's what's – but here, it also equates to Vasquez. And I'm not going to be Patrick Crayton saying he should start from day one, and you and I had this discussion. It should be 60-40 Maldonado until the playoffs and then 60-40 in terms of Vasquez. But one game every, like, 5 or 6 days for Vasquez isn't nearly enough with as good of a hitter as he is, and I think he's already pissed off. I think he went from complete shell shock when the trade happened to the fact that I think that he's trying real hard to be engaged with this team and be a good team player, but you can tell when they mentioned the stat last night, the three most innings in most games caught in Major League Baseball this year are all American League catchers. It's Murphy from the A's, and then it was Maldi and Vasquez neck and neck. And they're like, and Vasquez is going to fall off the planet because he's not going to catch as much anymore with Maldi. That I don't think that's why people thought the trade was made. People didn't think they were trading for a better backup catcher because you're getting one of the top catchers in baseball. And you're demoting it.
Well, I think you had an idea that it was going to be a timeshare.
We said early on until he learned the pitching staff, which I totally get.
Yeah. And Maldonado's been swinging well enough with the bat, like, the last 30 days to where it's not as dire as it was, like, in the first 2 months of the year. In fact, like, the last 30-day numbers, Maldonado's actually hitting better than Vasquez. So you can use that as your caveat. You can use that as your excuse. I'm not worried about the feelings of Christian Vasquez. If he wants to pout and be mad, I don't care. I'm not managing for Christian Vasquez. I'm managing for the Houston Astros. Now, the one worry that I would have, if Vasquez isn't playing semi-regularly, where he's getting 60% of the at-bats from the catcher position, is, look, hitters like timing. Hitters like rhythm. So if he's playing two out of every 5 days, I'm worried that you're trading for an offensive upgrade that's going to kind of decrease what he is offensively because he's not in a rhythm.
He's going to be rusty or whatever because of the fact that he's not. It's one thing to take batting practice and take pitches off a machine. Mm-hmm. It's totally different to take live pitching off a major league pitcher basically every day. So that you're in a groove, and you're right. He's going to come in rusty, and when you expect him to produce and look for the guy that put up the numbers that you're basing your decisions on, you're not getting the same guy because he's not getting the same at-bats and seeing the same pitches. So it's frustrating to me, and it's also frustrating because on the flip side, we've seen a ton of Will Smith already, and he just keeps throwing them out there.
Yeah, he's using them I mean, he's not the one using them, I guess, currently because it's in game. But the Astros have deployed him pretty nicely. He looks a lot better than he looked.
You think he can text during games?
Dusty?
Yeah.
Well, if he has a pirate that's sliding into third base that's losing their phone out of their pocket, potentially.
After a player in a game slides into third base last night and his cell phone pops out and the umpire has to point out, bro, your cell phone is sitting next to the base, and that's an awkward look. you got to wonder if Dusty, whether he's texting the clubhouse boy and the Bat Boys clubhouse guy is coming out to tell Joe, or if he's just directly texting into the dugout. I got to believe as much as Joe is saying in games on me, that Dusty's probably still got something to say about that, too.
I hope not. I hope not, but I wouldn't rule it out. Rex Ryan, now I think that's against the rules now with the electronics, which is a can of worms. Rex Ryan saying Dusty's the worst manager of a good Astros team since Jimmy Williams. That's a put down. He also said Willie Mays is still alive. Hire his old Heine as manager. Thad on our Twitch. Midday clowns know it's all griping about a manager with the best record in the league. Dog days of summer. You know what? You know the best thing that Dusty's done this year, which I think showed his acumen as a big league manager? When he led the AL All-Star team to victory over the National League. That shows you the greatness of Dusty Baker. That shows you how great of a manager he was, that he was able to lead the AL past the NL.
Here's the thing, Jeremy. As much as we say a good team can supersede no matter what manager making bad decisions makes, and this team has done that, can you imagine if they had a different, more modern-day manager at the helm?
Oh, like Espada?
Like Joe Espada. If that would have made a difference even more so in terms of the win totals and in terms of the success rate. Now, look, they're going to run away to the division no matter
what. Sure, yeah. I mean, we're nitpicking, but this is the regular season. Like, I really don't care too much about the Astros' win-loss record in August. What scares me is that he's given us signs and tendencies that it could be something that he does in October whenever we really start criticizing and nitpicking the lineups. Eric says, I'm sick of Dusty. This team is winning despite him. Managers don't influence the game much, and he's only hurting it. Best hitters on the best teams hit second. And what do the Astros have? Their second worst hitter in Yuli Gurriel. 8755, Dusty's the typical stubborn old man that won't change his ways. I bet he doesn't even know how to use his Apple phone and know how to use a laptop. Typical having his kids operate all his electronic gadgets. That's just mean. That's just mean about old Dusty Baker. We hope that he's well. Spencer says, is Pawpaw trying to show Click he's going to manage how he wants? I actually think that there's something to that. I think we saw it last year with Straw, and I think we see it. The fact that Mauricio Dubon has more center field starts than Chaz McCormick since Jake Meyers was brought up from his rehab assignment, I do think that that is a message.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that those that don't haven't seen and watched this team close enough for an extended period of time to realize the different things that we keep reminding you, that as much as you think because of their record, because of their success again this year, that everything is just peaceful, easy feelings behind the scenes, there are conflicts on an ongoing basis between Dusty Baker and James Click and the analytics staff and Dusty's real baseball dudes. And I think it's really just more Dusty. But it's not going away, and it's not something that you can say that doesn't happen and doesn't exist, because the beat reporters and everything else, whether it be at a later date or from time to time, will bring it up. And so you just have to accept it, just like you accept Dusty being Dusty. You could be a lot worse. But you've also survived a lot of the Dusty being Dusties that would be called out a lot more if you lost those games and you continued. You were a losing team instead of a winning team.
Andrew Brandt used to be in the Packers front office, engineered a lot of their success, ESPN as well. He's going to join the Killer Bees next. Look, Deshaun Watson still very much in the news. Andrew Brandt, who has experience in the legal department, we pick his brain about that and what else is going on around the National Football League. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. When I see old Pawpaw's batting orders, sometimes I just have to crack open some Gentle Ben. Vodka, when it's hot, I like a good refreshing drink. Gin is also right there in that conversation. When I need something a little bit stiffer, maybe I'm a little bit more annoyed about certain things, I like to dip into the bourbon. They're all part of the rotation for me, and a local Texas brand, Gentle Ben Spirits, does it better than anyone else. Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits that use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Presedo craft technology. It's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben, unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben. Compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when I first gave it a shot. Ricky Ford, who I'm going to see later today, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, had me out to the tasting room, and I tasted the difference, and ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentlebend.com. If you're in the League City area, swing by Hill's Liquor on South Shore, on your way home. Also, head to the tasting room now and try that bourbon. It is fantastic. Award-winning. They won the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. It is fantastic and exclusive to the tasting room in Alvin. Speaking of the tasting room in Alvin, how about having your fantasy football draft there? Take your fantasy football draft up a notch by having it at that tasting room in Alvin. Enjoy the fantastic Gentle Ben spirits. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line, being joined now by SI's Andrew Brandt, former front office executive with the Green Bay Packers.
Yes.
And a professor at Villanova. Yeah, Blankers loves the Packers. That's his team. Andrew, thanks for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees. I've been following your takes on the whole Deshaun Watson situation. And I love that phrase that you always have when legal matters come up in the league. There will be lawyers. What is your overall feeling of the Deshaun Watson news, how it's been handled by the NFL, the first time we've had an arbiter with Sue Robinson overlooking the whole process, and then Roger Goodell appealing it? What's been your takeaway of the whole process?
Yeah, guys, good to be with you. I mean, I think what we're seeing here is the commissioner of power is as strong as it ever has been. If it is challenged in court down the road, I think we'll come to the same conclusion we've had with the Tom Brady case, the Ezekiel Elliott case, the Adrian Peterson case, which is we've got a collective bargaining agreement that has for, I don't know, decades given the commissioner extraordinary power over basically anything. And the union continues to sign it away. There was a little bit of difference this year with an independent officer at the intro stage. But, of course, Roger Goodell or his designated person is responsible for the appeal stage where we're at right now. I just think the thing that continues to strike me, guys, is that the independent officer, again, the one jointly appointed by the union and the league, had factual findings that Deshaun Watson's conduct was egregious, that it was predatory, that it was sexual assault, albeit nonviolent. And those are striking words. And those are words the new appeal officer, Peter Harvey, can work with to make it a much stronger penalty.
So, Andrew, I'm curious, kind of like the fallout of all of this on two folds. One, the fallout and your reaction and how surprised you were that the Browns made the contract that they made, and how it had to aggravate every other owner and contract maker across the league going, what are you doing? And the money that you're throwing around with the guarantees and doing all this, especially with what this guy brings to the table, and just completely setting a new narrative for quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, as it relates to what you were talking about, if you're the commissioner, how bad of a look is it when the new collective bargaining and with the Players Association, you agree, we're going to take a step back so we don't have all the control. We're going to get someone else, like a third party involved. But then at the end of the day, you have to come in with the first time you use this system to throw your weight around and control the entire situation.
Well, on the second part of the question, we remember Sunday night before the decision that came out on Monday morning, August 1st, the union announced, for reasons unclear, that they weren't going to appeal this. Now, maybe they knew what was coming down. They were happy with the six games. But that may end up hurting them down the road because basically they accepted the six-game suspension, which they may try to argue that whatever new suspension replaces it, whatever. But, yeah, the union was trying to appeal by tweet to the NFL saying, hey, don't appeal this. You know, respect what she did. And the NFL's like, yeah, good luck with that. Of course we're going to appeal. But as far as the first part of your question, I've been talking about this since March. It's the most striking contract in the history of the league, and I don't think it's even close. The fact you have a real NBA, Major League Baseball-type contract, the first one I've ever seen in 30 years in the NFL. And what I mean by that, that means there's really little, if anything, Deshaun Watson can do to not get at least $229 million. Think about that. Yep. The most he could lose this year is $1 million. Now, I don't think it'll be more than a year suspension. So on a $230 million contract, that's the most he can lose for having assaulted a number of women. And the Browns did everything. It looks like the agent wrote the contract. If you had to give a contract to an agent and say, write it up, this is what it would look like. There's no suspension forfeiture of the bonus. It's fully guaranteed. It's $46 million a year. It's rock solid, even knowing what he did. Now, let's not put all the blame on the Browns, because the Saints and the Falcons were reportedly right in it. In fact, they were in the lead. But this is one of those things I just mentioned. The Saints and Falcons found to be choking points. They're not going there, whether it was a suspension bonus or whether it was the 46 a year or the fully guaranteed. So Cleveland won the sweepstakes. But here's the important point for your listeners. He got the best contract in the history of the NFL in part, and maybe in good part, to his own misconduct.
Yeah, that's
because the team in the city you're talking to me from did not want him. They did not want him. So that created an auction. And that auction has created this contract. Now, other owners are going to say that was an outlier, that's an aberration. But if I'm a player agent, I'm like, it's not an aberration. It's precedent. So there's the fight.
Andrew Brandt joining us on the HR&P guest line, former front office executive for the Green Bay Packers, works for SI, professor at Villanova as well. Andrew, I'm curious, I want to pick your brain on what Nick Caserio's doing in Houston. I know you're kind of watching this from afar. But an organization that was basically at rock bottom compared to the rest of their entire existence as an NFL organization. How do you view the job that Nick Caserio has done, albeit early in the process?
Well, it's early, obviously, and I think this is the mode that we see in a lot of sports. I'm in Philadelphia. The basketball team here did this for 5 years, which is really break the team down to the studs and build it back up. It's a strategy. It's something that has proven to be successful in the long term. It requires a lot of patience in the short term. It requires a willingness to lose. It requires a willingness to not compete at the highest level. But that's what they're going for. It's a long-term play in Houston. I'm a Stanford grad, so I'm a Davis Mills fan. So I think there's definitely potential there that people didn't see maybe in other teams or around the league. So I think that's the only way to look at it.
Well, and I coined the phrase embrace the suck, and it hasn't been received by everybody because of the fact that they love winning, but they don't understand how positive it can be long-term if they do it and follow the plan that they're following. So we hope Nick Caserio is on the right path. Yeah. I'm curious from your standpoint, having worked for a team, quote-unquote, owned by the people, to look at the ownership in Houston, would it be better to work for a team owned by the people with a board when you were making decisions that basically you could make, or better to be Cal McNair, who looks like he's so clueless that he doesn't even realize when they're trading the best wide receiver in football for a bowl of soup and doing some of the things that they've been doing to get to the point where they got to rock bottom, as Jeremy said, but now it looks like there's finally a brighter light that looks like they're going to get out of this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all debate the Packers versus other teams. There were times, certainly, I was so appreciative of not having an owner, and I had so much autonomy. If I did a contract for $20 million or I did a contract for $30 million, there was really no one there to say, hey, Andrew, that was good or that was bad. It was really a lot of autonomy. I didn't take that for granted. And I talked to colleagues around the league that, you know, the owner came in and demanded something, had to drop everything and all those kind of things. Having said that, you know, we'd go to NFL meetings, and I'd feel a little patronized, you know, where the senior management of the league, even other owners, would kind of pat you on the back or pat you on the head and good old little Green Bay with no owner. You know, so you have different sides of that, and I think even with owners, the best of the owners do what we did in Green Bay. They let good they hire good people and stay out of the way. So hopefully that's what happens with Houston.
Well, and it seems like they're there now with Caserio, but they did that with Bill O'Brien, and Bill O'Brien did the opposite and I think went nuts with his power. That's why when I alluded to, I don't know how any owner doesn't, even if he doesn't normally get involved, put his foot down when you trade DeAndre Hopkins and get the return you got.
Right. I mean, listen, it gets tricky. You know, obviously I was there for the messy divorce of Brett Favre. They recently had a messy situation with Aaron Rodgers. An owner would probably step in and just say, well, it's not going to be messy. We're doing X, Y, Z. And then he or she would take all the blame. But you know, you just have to work through those without an owner.
Andrew, we always appreciate the time. Always very good insight. Hope to catch up again very soon. Enjoy the start of football season.
Likewise, guys. Take care.
It's Andrew Brandt of SI, former Packer executive, also a professor. You know, he's studious if you're a professor over at Villanova. Cal not meddling. Good thing. And also what he had to say about the Houston Texans. Long-term patience. How do we feel about Andrew Brandt embracing the suck? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, Doc Linville's a plastic surgeon. He does all kinds of surgeries. He's phenomenal at his job. But what he's better than anybody else, in my opinion, at is the NeoGraft procedure. And that's what I've been talking about with you guys for almost a year now. The NeoGraft procedure is a game changer because if you are thinning or losing your hair and you feel like you just got to shave it all off, there's an alternative. It's called the NeoGraft procedure. And really what you need to know is it's your own hair. They're just moving some of it from where you're always going to have hair, like the sides and back, and genetically you will always have hair there, to the areas where you need it, whether it be in the front at your hairline or in the back on top where you normally lose hair quickly. And it's simple because of the fact that it's not trying to mask the problem. It's not sprays and creams and foams and all these things that just try to hang on or cover up what you are already losing. It's putting your own real hair where you need it and giving you better coverage area, a better appearance, and a lot more self-esteem in the process. It's phenomenal. And for ESPN listeners, you get a deal that no one else gets. You get a free consultation with Doc Linville's office, which normally costs $150. Just go to 975hair.com and sign up for that first appointment. That first appointment's free. Ask all the questions like I did. Find out that there's a 95%+ success rate for every follicle moved. It will stay, it will grow, and it will be there for you probably for the rest of your life, because they're taking it from an area where it never goes away. And it's fantastic. They can walk you through the procedure itself, the recovery, the fact that you're going to see the overall results in about 6 to 9 months, but you'll see the hair growing on a daily basis. They are fantastic people getting outstanding results in this process with the people that they work with. You could be next in line. Check them out today. 975hair.com. Go see Doc Linville.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
How about Andrew Brandt, former front office executive for the Green Bay Packers, embracing the suck?
I loved it.
He was embracing the suck, saying, yeah, part of the process, tearing it down to the studs, not really trying to win short term. You have to have patience in the short term, which is part of embracing the suck. You know, embrace it, have the patience in the short term, find other reasons to be excited for the team, but that it does work out the best in the long term.
Yeah, look, I loved it. I actually stepped away from the mic and mouthed you. Oh, my God, he's embracing the suck.
He did.
It's phenomenal because I keep emphasizing, I'm not doing this to be derogatory to the Texans. I'm saying this and believing in it because I believe it's the best path for the Texans to take for long-term success. And I loved hearing it from somebody else because it just seems like the more that Nick Caserio sticks with his plan, it's along those lines, but that the plan is working. And we're seeing positivity. We're seeing development of talent. We're seeing draft picks that we can get behind that show you that we're past being down to the studs. Now we're starting to put up drywall. Now we're starting to do some things to see the structure actually being rebuilt. And it's fun. It's encouraging. It's not the negativity of every day going, what are we going to hear about Deshaun or Jack Easterby today? What's going to suck about, you know, how everybody thinks that we're the laughing stock of the league? Now it's about the positivity. It's about Davis Mills. It's about the young draft picks. It's about this team and how good can it be. That's fantastic. But don't put the cart in front of the horse and try and jump it too soon trying to get wins for a season or two and have it set you back.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting what he had to say. I thought it was a good question by you. Talking about the fact that Green Bay doesn't have an owner, per se, that's owned by the fans, it's owned by the city. So you really don't, like, you have a chair, you have a CEO, all of that stuff, but it's not really the same as an owner, a guy that has the ultimate power and authority. And you brought up the Cal McNair not, you know, stepping in whenever O'Brien traded DeAndre Hopkins. See, I don't really view that as a negative. I understand that the trade was not great, but I rather, like, if you had to pick between the two, you only get two choices. You have an owner who does not meddle, or you have an owner that does meddle. Give me the owner that does not meddle.
Yeah, I think he made that very clear. I think that there's a time and a place. Like, I think that if you had an owner that, whether you meddle or not, you're in the day-to-day operations enough to realize when a bad trade's about to be made, right? Or as much as he said, it's great when you have basically the autonomy to do whatever you want and not have anybody breathing down your neck or looking over your shoulder. But that's also an owner that realizes, I hired the right people that know what they're doing. When you gave Bill O'Brien the general manager's role and he had never done it before and you really didn't keep a very close eye on him and just believed he was going to do what was right for the organization.
Can I back him up for a little bit there, though?
You can.
Was it a way of him, like, just, okay, I'm giving an idiot and a buffoon full authority and power to do whatever he wants? Or was he giving Bill O'Brien the rope to hang himself?
I don't think he was given the rope to hang himself, because I think that, look, in order to replace essentially a family, almost a relative in Rick Smith, you know, he had a seat at the holiday table with the McNairs. He was in tight with Robert and the family.
Yeah.
And I think that when they eventually made that move, that, and we knew that they're the two highest ranking football guys that there were Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith. And the fact that they essentially just said, Bill, you win, and then handed him the general manager
title. Well, they gave him the choice to basically pick a GM first and gain.
Which, of course, he was going to either pick his guys that were puppets, and when they didn't turn out to be the right puppets, he essentially just did it all himself. For whatever the reason, at a certain point, if you're monitoring what's going on daily with your football team, and whether it's monitoring it by being there and watching or monitoring it by reading what's being put out there by the people that know what they're doing nationally and locally, you realize this guy might be feeling a little bit too good about his power and doing some things that are in his best interest, but not necessarily in the best interest of the team, and try to put a stop to it. The fact that you basically just stayed out of the way even then, that's what really bothers me the most.
But then he fired him. But then he fired him pretty
quickly. He
eventually
did. But the damage was already done. I mean, D-Hop was gone, and, you know, and he cleared house to guys he didn't like.
But I think he put O'Brien in a position where you're going to find out your answer. Either you're going to succeed or you're going to fail. And look, it might have happened by accident, but it had happened. Like, either he's going to succeed based on he being a total, like, having total power, or you're going to fail because you have total power. And he eventually failed. But, like, maybe this is a hot take, but give me Cal McNair over Jerry Jones. Give me an owner that's going to hire. And look, he didn't hire Bill O'Brien and didn't put it, like, he didn't hire a good person in Bill O'Brien to give you the best chance to have success. But give me an owner that's going to hire very good people and then let those very smart people that are good at their job do their job without them meddling.
I understand what you're saying. I wouldn't say Jerry Jones is the best example simply because he made himself general manager too, right?
Well, that's over meddling.
Yeah, if you're an owner that cares but lets good people do their jobs, that means you have a general manager and a head coach that are competent and they do what they do. I think where Jerry gets himself in trouble is that whole general manager's, you know, role where he's too involved and he's too just whatever I say goes, no matter if it makes sense or not. And that's where you can get in trouble with picks you give up and things you're trying to accomplish. I think on the flip side, though, when you look at Cal, the one thing we knew about Robert McNair, Mr. McNair, was the fact that he was there all the time. He had his finger on the pulse of everything going on with that football team, good, bad, and otherwise. But he knew what he had in DeAndre Hopkins. He knew who his best players were. He knew that not all of them were going to be practice guys and follow everything, every rule to a T guys. But he knew what they gave him on Sundays. And I think that's where he would have drawn the line. Because obviously, to me, where it starts is where the Hopkins trade there's just, it will never make sense to me how that got all the way through the organization and made sense for the team to make.
I think it's an owner just not going to be involved in those type of decisions. He's just not going to make those calls. Somebody texting in 0830 to our HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Had Bill O'Brien not traded Hopkins, would Caserio have? Potentially, because the Texans tore it down to the studs. They totally rebuilt. Now, I'll actually, like, this is not a compliment to O'Brien or praise for O'Brien, but if you were going to trade DeAndre Hopkins at some point between then and now, he had peak value then. Mm-hmm. Like, DeAndre Hopkins has lost value to when you traded him. So, like, if you believe the NFL is like a market, stock market, where you want to buy high, sell low, or I'm sorry, I got the backwards, sell high, buy low, then they traded Hopkins at the right time. Mm-hmm. The problem more than anything else was the return was a joke.
But also where your rest of your team was. At a time you traded him, your team was as close as it's ever been to being on top of the AFC. So you were so close, and yet it was like you were pulling the plug. That was also consequential. I think that in the question that was asked, Caserio, at the time that he took over the team was already in complete rebuild. They just weren't going to admit it yet. And so, therefore, I think he probably would have looked to trade DeAndre Hopkins if he still had him.
I think so,
too. We talked about it. The most valuable asset he had left on his roster by the time he took over was Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, but if you would have traded him when Caserio took over, he was not at his peak value like he was
true.
When O'Brien traded him.
You're also correct.
But O'Brien didn't trade him for his peak value, which really is my biggest contempt.
And when, like, Diggs goes right after that for a first-round pick or before,
I think
right
it was
the same,
before, but I don't remember exactly.
But regardless, we knew that you should have at least gotten a first-round pick out of the deal. It just made it look even worse.
Even this offseason, what is the trade value for a top receiver?
More.
It's a first-round draft pick. 713-780-ESPN, our HRP listener line. Let's go out to it. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on today, Keith?
Hey, guys. Enjoying the show as usual. Last week, Hall of Fame game, there was a big question of, do you watch the Hall of Fame game?
Yeah.
And I'm with, is it Brendan?
Yeah, Brendan loves it. It's his Super Bowl.
Last night, after the first night of Hard Knocks, that's why I love football. And I watch football from Hall of Fame all the way to Super Bowls. And I watch those guys, how they practice and everything. So with respect to embracing the suck, has anyone asked the players what they think about that? Because I know what we want them to do as far as future picks and everything. But with the hard work and sweat and stuff they put into it, has anybody ever asked him what they think about it? Do okay, but don't do too good.
Appreciate the call, Keith. Look, we've said we don't want the players to not try to win.
Yeah.
It's just that the roster's not good enough to win. And I think that the way it's constructed, no one's saying tank. They're just saying that at the present time, with the roster as it currently sits and has been constructed or tried to be reconstructed, they had the worst roster in the league a year ago anyway. So it's not like we're saying go in the, just completely throw games or play players. Don't play so hard, or do you like that or not? That's why it's not like front and center with a mantra of embrace the suck.
No.
They're still trying to win games.
They should. They should. We want the players to be competitive.
They're all trying to play for their jobs or work for their jobs in the front office.
This is more Caserio than the 53 guys that are eventually going to make the team and go into week one against the Colts. This is Caserio building a roster that is not built to win. It is built for the future. And look, you might even say, well, look, the Texans way better at certain positions. I agree. The Texans are way better at certain positions. But there's also not depth to built to win. Look around the NFL and look at the second, third strings of any NFL team and compare it to the Houston Texans. It is a far cry from the Houston Texans and where they need to be. But that's by design. That's because Caserio is not worried about being a playoff team in 2022. It's because he's worried about being a champion someday.
Right.
In like 3, 5 years, 7 years, whatever you want the window to be. Nick Caserio has built this team to where they're going to embrace the suck. Now, Nick Caserio is hoping that a lot of the young players over exceed expectations, and maybe the Vegas total being 4.5, maybe the young players lead you to 6 wins. You stay healthy all year. Davis Mills is Kirk Cousins. Derek Stingley looks like the next Deion Sanders. Perhaps you can get to 6 or 7 wins, and that's a good thing. Like, our biggest thing in the offseason was, if you get to 6 or 7 wins because your young guys are playing well, that's great. That is kind of accelerating the rebuild. You have 2 first-rounders in the next 2 years of the NFL draft. But if you're winning seven games because you're playing a bunch of fighting Rex Burkheads, that's a position you cannot be. So it's more roster building and management than we want the players to suck. We don't want that. We want Stingley to be great. We want Petrie to be great. But the roster is just not built to win.
Yeah, no, look, and that's all part of it. The part of it is just not trying to speed it up too fast too soon so that you get ahead of yourselves and slow down the actual rebuild. As long as the young players are progressing, and we've said we are extremely excited to watch this draft class develop, and we believe that there is a boatload of talent and some really good football players that were drafted by this team that are going to be long-term starters and pieces of this rebuild. But I believe from the get-go, before we even got to this point, that it was going to take 2 years of drafts like that to really get this team in a position to start spending money to get free agents to fortify the roster to take that shot at winning.
Interesting what Andrew had to say. Cal McNair, not a meddling owner. Is that a good thing? Do you want Cal McNair not to meddle? There's been examples where it's hurt him in the past. I think it could potentially be an advantage now. What do you feel about it? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. It's their fifth-year anniversary. That means 5 years in business means they're doing something right. Right now, if you go to ApolloMH.com, you can check in and find out all the specials they got going on, including some things around the fifth-year anniversary. But if you mention my name, Joel Blank, you're going to get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. And that means something because it's going to put you on the path to getting your health back. Your health is your wealth, and you got to invest in yourself just like you invest in the stock market. And the way you do it is by going to Apollo Men's Health and see what they can do to help you with some of the things you're dealing with, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. People are experiencing problems as they get older and not being their old self in terms of being able to do what they used to do. It starts with energy, and if from that point you can get hormone therapy or a B12 shot every week that can help you get that kind of energy back in your life on a daily basis. It's for both men and women. If you want to get into the gym and you want to get in a workout program, starting with a full body composition analysis can allow you to chart the process, and that every couple of weeks when you do another one, which literally only takes 60 seconds, the results that you get show if your body fat is down, if your muscle mass is up, and the key numbers that will tell you you're making progress. You want to recover quicker because you're sore after the gym? HGH peptide therapy. And they also have things for your smoothies, fat burners, and other things with two locations to better serve you. But go to ApolloMH.com. Book your first appointment. Follow the process. Listen to the people that know. And the experts are going to put you on a plan that works and get you the results. Check them out today. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.